Hey everyone, thank you for having me. I'm Janet B. I've recovered from compulsive eating and bulimia. Instead of giving you my history, I just want to dive right in on sponsoring. So, my sponsor once said that it's the role of a sponsor to take her sponsee's hand and put it in the hand of God. So, as a sponsor, that's my job, is to help my sponsee get a relationship with God. So, how do we do it? So, I figured I could do the most, give the most help if I just talked about the early part, which is someone being willing to go to any length, step one, step two, and then step three, how to help people with that. And then the rest is just cleaning up the wreckage of our past. So on page 58, it says, if you have decided you want what we have, and what do we have? A spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So, a spiritual awakening, what is that? So, they describe that on page 25. They talk about a spiritual experience. It's basically when God comes in and does a renovation job in our souls and kicks out the illness of compulsive eating. So, of course, right, we'd have to be foolish not to want that. So, it says, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then, and I always say then and only then, are you ready to take certain steps? So I've had people ask me, how do I help a sponsee who's not doing everything I tell her? I'm like, so I said, you really can't work with someone who's not willing to go to any lengths. That's a requirement to work the steps. Or so I got a call the other day or a text, my sponsee is struggling with dishonesty. I'm like, no. There's no struggling with dishonesty. Either we're going to decide to be honest or we're not. So I don't negotiate with my sponsees. I mean, obviously, I'm realistic. So, for instance, one of the things I require is a meeting a day. But if I'm sponsoring a single mother who has three jobs and seven kids, of course I'm going to relax that. So here's what I generally do. If someone contacts me and says they're interested in working with me, I will first do what the big book says and I will have a conversation with them. I will tell them about me and I will ask about them. So the person doesn't think that I'm viewing her as a project. People aren't projects here, right? So I want to get to know her as a person and get to, and I say her because I only sponsor women. So I want to get to know her. And then in the big book, it says what they did is they gave people a copy of the big book, told them to read it, and then come back. Well, by now, generally people have read it. So I'll give them something to do. I'll make them suffer through a podcast of mine and then come back and I'll say, write down three things that stood out to you and any questions. And then I'll go through part of the book with them. And then after we've had at least two conversations, I'll tell them what I require. And, again, everyone can make their own requirements. This is what I require just because I believe it works. To be on a food plan that's weighed and measured. If they already have one, that's great. If not, I can help them with one. And that's texted to me before breakfast every morning. Three phone calls a day to people in recovery, and I give them like 20 numbers because it's so important to develop a support system. I tell them they have to be rigorously honest. Y'all, in my first 6.5 years in Overeaters Anonymous, while I kept binging, no one ever sat me down and said that if you're not honest, you may as well go away because God won't coexist with dishonesty. So I tell them they have to be honest. I tell them every day they have to do some self-sacrifice in order to help another person. Because the big book says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of this illness. So we need to start practicing the opposite. I tell them they have to spend 30 minutes every morning in prayer and meditation trying to connect with God because this program is about getting a relationship with God, and you can't have a relationship with someone if you don't spend time with them. So I say you have to spend time connecting with God. And then, we'll work through the steps. So I just start taking them through the steps. So I read I don't go line by line in the book with them. I give them certain portions. I've done a podcast on the entire big book, so I tell them certain things to listen to, and then I go over things in the book that I think are the most important. And I always say, take the night and think about it. Here's what I require. If you have any objections, let's talk about them. If you think you can't do something, otherwise, take the night and think about it. If you want to work with someone else, no hard feelings. So if the next day they tell me they want to work with me, that great. Sometimes they say, no, I don't want to do that, or you're crazy, or whatever they might say. But if someone comes back, then it's my job to get her through the steps. So the first thing is step one. And again, my first 6.5 years in OA, nobody really explained step one. Here's what they said. They said, you admit you're powerless over food? Great. Here's a food plan. Stick to it. And I would think, okay, you guys are telling me I'm powerless over food, but now in the same breath, you're telling me to have the power to stick to a food plan. How does that work? And the answer is, it doesn't work. That was never the intent of the founders of this program. I need to start getting power right away. And I'd heard this beautiful saying from a guy on the West Coast, willingness allows grace to enter. And it has been my experience that 90 At least 90% of the time, as soon as someone is willing and agrees and starts doing this work, they get enough power to be able to stick to a food plan. And that was my experience. I said I wasn't going to tell my story, just this one thing. 6.5 years in, still binging, getting worse, binging right before a meeting, going to a meeting, finding a sponsor who had been through the steps who I was scared of because I knew I could not manipulate this person. And it was when it was said to me, what are you willing to do? I said, anything you tell me. Well, the first thing, one of the first things I was told that I had to be honest. Thank God someone finally had the guts to tell me that. And then since I lived an hour and a half from my sponsor, and this was in the days before cell phones and texts, I recovered when I was in my 20s. So I had a food sponsor who lived about 10 blocks from me. Do you think I was allowed to call my food sponsor and tell her what I was eating? No, I had to go to her house every day and show her what I was eating, and I was not allowed to keep any food in my house except like spices or oil or whatever. And it didn't even occur to me. Oh, and my job at the time, I lived in New York City. And my job was on the Lower East Side, and it was a social worky type job, and my clients were all on the Upper West Side. So, and my apartment was somewhere in the middle. So I would travel with my day's food in my backpack with like a can opener to open my can of vegetables. It never occurred to me to say to my sponsor, "Are you out of your mind?" I was just so grateful that there was someone recovered who was willing to help me. I just said, "I'll do anything." So step one, the way I can best describe it is by an example. So I believe there's like a bridge that connects our memory and our conscious mind where we make our decisions. So for instance, I have a terrible cat allergy. So if I'm about to go, someone invites me to her house, I always ask, do you have a cat? And if she says yes, immediately my memory scans, all the data points. You were near a cat, you had an asthma attack. You were near a cat, 3 days later, you had a sinus infection. You're near a cat, you got sick. Generates a thought to run across a bridge to my conscious mind to say, stop, danger, cats will give you an asthma attack. I'm sorry, I'm talking fast. I just want to get a lot and I only have 11 minutes left. Okay, so same thing. I grew up in Miami, suntan city. I would go to the beach and I have gotten some nasty sunburns for not putting on sunscreen. So now, if I'm about to go to the beach and I'm like, oh, do I really need sunscreen? It's like, again, my memory scans the data points. You got this really bad sunburn and you were peeling. You got this really bad sunburn and you were in pain. Generates a thought to run across a bridge to my conscious mind to say, stop, danger, put on sunscreen. So you would think when it came to food, the same thing would happen. So there I was in college. This is my best example. I would binge on, well, pretty much everything, but a standard was this box of cookies. It came in a box of 20. I would tell myself, I'm just going to have one or two. We all know how that story ended. The whole box gone, sometimes the second box, my head in the toilet, unable to get up for class the next day. So there I go, about to go to the drugstore to buy my box of cookies and just have one or two. And my memory scans the data points. You said you'd have one or two and you ate the whole box. You felt miserable the next day. You said you were going to have one or two. You ate two boxes. You made yourself throw up. You couldn't go to class. All that generates a thought to run across the bridge to my conscious mind to say, stop, danger. You won't be able to stop at one or two. Except, unlike with cats and sunburns, the bridge was broken and the thought couldn't get across. I had no protection against the first compulsive bite. My memory failed to keep me in check. So what was I going to do? Right? I was hopeless. And to figure out like how that bridge get broken, it doesn't matter. We all want to figure out how we got this illness so we could blame someone, generally our parents. But as we learn when we go through the steps, we have to forgive. And for most of us, our parents really weren't that bad after all. They were saddled with kids like me. So what I do, and I have my sponsees do, is I go through that whole broken bridge story, and I have it as a sheet. So if anyone texts me, I'm happy to send it to you. And I tell them, write two examples of how your bridge works, like mine's cats and sunscreen, and then give me three examples of how your bridge doesn't work when it comes to food. Like, I'll start tomorrow. Well, that's just another example of the broken bridge, thinking that 8 hours with my head on the pillow will give me willpower I didn't have before. So it's really important that a person sees that she is powerless and believes that without help, something beyond human help, she's gonna start binging again. And then step two, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And we see in step three that that power is God, right? Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So right from the beginning, I'm talking about God. Some people say, well, why don't you allow group as the higher power? Let me tell you, if I wanted to binge, all 73 of you may love me. You can do zero to give me power. You could give me good information, but really the good information is how to access the power of God. So, right at the beginning, from day one, they're praying, they're meditating, they're reading the spiritual literature of their choice to connect with God, to access his power. And that power starts coming in. It says in step two, we start getting power and direction. So step two, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So I lead them through the beginning of We Agnostics, and particularly on the paragraph that deals with prejudices, and ask them to look at their prejudices against God and then refute them. Not to assume that every thought that comes into our head has to be true. And then once they believe and admit, okay, yeah, there's a God, then it's the ABCs. It's, do you believe that you're a compulsive eater and can't manage your own life? And that's usually yes. Do you believe that no human power could restore you to sanity? And that's yes. And by the way, that means no group, no doorknob, no sunset or meadow or light bulb or anything like that, but God, who's referred to as our creator, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. Those aren't terms that have to do with any kind of religion. Remember in step three, it says, we said to our maker, God, I offer myself to thee. So a creator who cares. So this is often where people get stuck. So this is how I work through them. So, okay, you believe that you're a compulsive eater and cannot manage your own life. Yes, that probably no human power could restore you to sanity. By this time, they say, yes, no human power. Then the C, do you believe that God could and would if he were sought? And this is where people often get stuck. So I break it down and I say, do you believe there's a God? And they've been praying and meditating. So maybe they started out not believing, but it's like, gosh, I've been abstinent for a few days now. And yeah. And so they start believing there's a God. So I said, okay, great. Do you believe God can restore other people to sanity? And it's, well, yeah, I've seen him do it. Obviously, you look at people on the lines and yes. Okay, do you believe he could restore you to sanity if he wanted to? He may not want to, but could he if he wanted to? And they have to say yes because he's God, right? He could do anything he wants. Then here's where people get tripped up and we need to help them. Do you believe he will restore you personally to sanity? And this is where people say, I don't know. I no, he won't. He could, but he won't. And then it's okay, why? And so I've come up with five reasons that anyone could give. I don't think there's any reason other than one of these five. If any of y'all think of one, please let me know. But here they are. I've done some really bad things. I don't deserve it. I've tried this so many times before and it hasn't worked. God might help people with cancer, but I caused this, so he won't help me. And I'm not willing to seek him. So to the person who's number five and says, I'm not willing to seek him, I say, you're right. I can't guarantee that God will restore you to sanity because the conditions are that we have to seek him. So to the first person who says, I've done some really bad stuff, I'm like, great, you're in great company. So do the founders of AA. That's why they put the ninth step in where we have to make amends. We all did a bunch of bad stuff. I used to slash myself with razors to get attention, and say I was mugged, I was raped, I was a psychopath, and God restored me to sanity. Now, so that comes to the second thing, feeling I don't deserve it. So then I think we tell people you have two options. You can spend like 70 grand on therapy to try and get a therapist to convince you you deserve it. Or you can just acknowledge that you don't deserve it. You're not worthy. Neither was I. But the word worthy is nowhere in this big book. Worthiness is never a requirement. Only willingness is. So I tell people, I wasn't worthy, and I am still not worthy of all the good things that God does for me. He doesn't care about worthy. So it doesn't matter if we feel shame or unworthiness. It's okay. And by the way, those things disappear as we work through those steps. It's kind of ironic. If we work to feel worthy, it doesn't work. But if we work on finding God and helping others, we start feeling worthy automatically. Okay, so I tell them, doesn't matter if you're not worthy. I'm not worthy. So what? Does it's not a requirement. Number three, I've forgotten. Hold on, give me a second. I've tried this so many times before and it doesn't work. So I'm not very good with my cell phone, and I can pick it up and try 100 times to take a picture by pushing the on-off button. And then let's say someone comes along, my son, and says, Mom, what are you doing? You're pushing the wrong button, and shows me how to push the right button. It doesn't matter if this is my first time trying to take a picture or if I've been trying to take pictures for 6.5 years. If I'm shown the right button and I'm willing, suddenly I can take pictures. And if I say, well, God might help people with cancer, but I caused this illness. I mean, again, nobody knows how we get it. Some people say we get it as a result of our selfishness or we're born with it. It doesn't matter. But let's say I believe I caused this, so God won't help me. Well, so let's say I've got this cell phone where I can now take pictures, and I'm crossing the street, and I get hit by a truck, and both my legs are broken. And when the ambulance comes, who of us is ever going to say to the ambulance driver, don't take me to the hospital to fix my broken legs? It's my fault I got hit by a truck. We would never do that. We would just say, you know what? I caused it, but I need help. But we don't do that with God. With God, we just get like all noble, like I can't go to God anyway. We can. So we see. So once we believe that there is a God who cares about us, who will restore us to sanity, then it's easy to turn our will and our lives over to the care of this God, right? To his care. Once we know he loves us, of course we will. Will we sometimes have to do hard things? Yes, but you know what? I get to choose my hard. Being in the illness binging is hard. So is working this program, and it's inconvenient, it takes a lot of time. There's no door number three. I get to choose which hard I get. I have chosen to turn my life over to the care and direction of God. That's what I hopefully help my sponsees to do. And then the rest is just cleaning up the wreckage of the past. When we do that, cleaning up the wreckage of each day, praying and meditate to get closer to God and helping others. And that's all I have time for. So thank you.